Eric Roberts is a fucking man. He's the greatest fucking actor since acting began. We should give him every medal, every trophy and award. He's the greatest fucking actor that you've ever seen or ever heard.
Eric Roberts, the fucking man. Eric Roberts, the fucking man.
Eric Roberts is the fucking man. Eric Roberts is the fucking man. Eric Roberts is the fucking man. If there's anything that you can do, Eric Roberts fucking can.
Welcome, friends, to episode 7 of Eric Roberts is the fucking man, the comprehensive examination of the life, career, works, podcast, everything Eric Roberts. I'm Doug Tilley, and with me, as always, is Mr. Todd Rigney. How are you doing today, Todd?
I'm doing very well, Doug. How about yourself?
Oh, Todd. Actually, for the first time since we started recording this podcast, I'm not doing as well as I normally would be.
That's not what I like to hear at all.
I know. I do apologize. The reason being is because I'm tired. I'm so tired, Todd.
Is it Eric Roberts related?
It's not Eric Roberts burnout like you might think. No, it's the regular kind of tired. It's just based on not getting enough sleep. So what you're going to find, listeners, on this episode of Eric Roberts is the fucking man, that I'm going to overcompensate by energizing myself, literally pushing myself out there to make sure that everyone gets the full Eric Roberts is the fucking man experience that they know and love throughout our 6, now 7 episodes of the podcast.
Because you're dedicated like that.
That's I'm dedicated.
I love you, man.
I didn't know that you loved me, Todd.
I do.
Well, I love you, man.
You're my Eric Roberts brother from another mother.
Now, speaking of Eric Roberts, this podcast is about Eric Roberts. and over the past 2 weeks, as per usual, so much exciting stuff in the Eric Roberts verse, including, once again, you, Todd, got retweeted by the man himself.
I did.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was an experiment to see if he would. So I tagged him in the post, and lo and behold, he retweeted it.
Now, you're playing a dangerous game here, Mr.
Tucker. I am.
Yeah.
I figured, you know, hey, well, let's see what he thinks about it. And, you know, the retweet is a positive, I guess, until he actually listens to one of our episodes. And then, you know, he might block me, which I'm totally anticipating.
It's a good thing that I know. Thanks to his Twitter feed that Eric Roberts is currently watching Pixels in a 3D movie theater because so he doesn't know what we're doing. We're covertly recording a podcast about him and his life. But once he discovers it, and really, you're just so dangerous what you're doing. Once he discovers it and then he decides to wipe us off the face of the planet, I'm really going to have to blame you, both you, actually, and Rue, the composer of our theme song, to some extent, because you just want to promote us so badly that...
Yes.
I mean, I just don't want anyone to know that this exists. That's what I would prefer, obviously. But it's not just you that I'm talking to today, Todd. Staying quietly on the sidelines, being very polite right now because I haven't introduced him yet, is our guest today. And I'm extremely excited about him, just like I'm excited about all of our guests, but particularly this guest, until the next guest comes along, who I'm also very excited about. This guest is a film journalist, a publicist, a radio personality, so you should expect quality, quality speaking, not like you get from the two of us. If you're in Victoria, BC, which you should be, and I wish I was, you can hear his dulcet tones on Cool FM and CFAX 1070. But today you're going to be hearing him talk about Eric Roberts. Welcome to the show, Mr. Jason White.
I am so happy to be here, Doug. Thanks so much for having me.
This is exciting, Jason. I've never actually gotten to talk to you before. I've known you for a little while through social media, and this is... But now you're here. Now you're mine, is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, you and I are like, we've been Twitter besties.
Yes.
You know, we have a sort of a lingo, you and I, that like we really kind of get each other. And we sort of get, we have like our mutual friends in Toronto as well. Mm-hmm. That I also know, quick shout out, you know, Rachel West is sort of like a co-buddy of ours as well. She's one of the best people I know in the business. So the fact that, like, you know, we're all connected online and everything is great. But yeah, please, you know, you guys are both welcome. Come out to Victoria, watch some movies. That's the thing that I do out here. Movies and, of course, the radio shows, and have a podcast called Cinema Spiel as well that I work with. So yeah, I'm just the movie guy. And for Eric Roberts, I've always adored him. He's like, to me, he's like the guy who does not stop working. I don't think he ever turns down a job ever.
For better or for worse. Yes, Jason, yeah. as you just hinted at, you complete me. And, well, I mean, Todd, you complete me as well. The three of us complete a circle or some sort of oval shape. And it's that I'm really glad to hear your enthusiasm for Eric Roberts, Jason, because the fact of the matter is, being a fan of Eric Roberts, not a prerequisite to be a guest on this show. In fact, I know for a fact that in the future we're going to have people who outright despise him. We may have had one or two in the past already, but you seem to like Eric Roberts because of his willingness to take chances or, as you just said, basically do anything that's offered to him.
He seems to be working more than Samuel L. Jackson. Now, that's saying something. You look at his amount of credits that he has, but the fact that, like, he's involved in almost every movie. Like, I see him in so many movies a year. Like, I see virtually every release that comes out to theaters, and he is just everywhere. Like, I mean, you look at, like, the movies that he's coming up with. It's countless. Like, I don't know where to begin.
Well, even more than those movies that arrive in theater. Yeah. He's also appearing in a lot of movies that might not necessarily make it. Not to mention, obviously, he's taking over the music video world, which music videos so hot right now in 2015. but yes, not only has he recently appeared, of course, in the Rihanna video for Bitch Better Have My Money, but a little bird told me, a little bird being Chris Cornell's Twitter feed, that he's going to be in an upcoming Chris Cornell video. What do you think about that?
Wow, Chris Cornell? Really? Mm-hmm. Okay.
That's right.
I don't know where to begin on that, but like, what does he do in these videos? Is he sort of like...
He sort of just shows up and...
There.
He sort of just shows up and, because they're videos, he doesn't get to say anything. Yeah. And people tend to stare at him and wonder what he's doing, and he's usually a creepy police officer or a creepy husband or a creepy man. Or just something
creepy, right?
Creepy Eric Roberts, generally, is what I would say.
Okay. Well, I have a question for you. How self-aware do you think Eric Roberts is? Like, what I mean by that is, like, is he aware that, like, people sort of look at him like this? Or is he just such a workaholic? Or does he, like, he knows that he sort of has, like, this sort of interesting fan base to him?
I don't pretend to speak for Eric Roberts, but I will say that the insight afforded to us through his various reality show appearances would mm-hmm. make me believe that he is someone who is aware, especially because he makes a lot of appearances at conventions and things like that. So he's certainly aware of that kind of fandom that he has. But I also think that, and again, this is just my impression, that he sort of resigned to the level of fame that he has and the amount of work that he's willing to do, that he just wants to be out there as much as possible. He seems to have a very strong family life, very kind of committed relationship with his wife, who was also his manager. So I would say that he is aware. That said, I'm not sure if he was to listen to an episode of this show that he would necessarily entirely understand where we're coming from.
Well, and the thing is, there have been retweets, like you were saying, that mm-hmm. Like Richard has been retweeted. So I think that, you know, that's a challenge. I think we just got to get him to, you know, listen to the podcast and endorse it himself.
No. We cannot have that happen.
Oh, we can't. Okay.
No, that would be what if he heard it and what if he didn't like us?
Well, I know you said that earlier, but I'm just like, wonder, you know.
I am a likable personality, and I recognize this. And Todd is, of course, extremely likable. But I do worry that in combination with the two of us, and also the fact that we sometimes talk shit about him and his movies, that maybe he might listen and be like, oh, these guys are jokers, or maybe these guys are trying to make fun of me, which, again, that is not the purpose of this podcast. Oh. It is a celebration of Eric Roberts, the man, and his career. It just happens to be kind of a odd idea for a podcast.
Well, it's not odd to me. I mean, I appreciate it. I've always loved actors. I especially love character actors. In fact, one of my all-time favorite actors is, you know, Philip Baker Hall, mm-hmm. who's been in a lot of Paul Thomas Anderson movies. And he's sort of like that guy who shows up, and he's been doing that like for over 30, 40 years.
He's looked old.
I like character actors more than like regular actors in an odd way.
Philip Baker Hall is the fucking man. I mean, he really is. Yeah. And he's looked old for about 70 years.
Exactly.
I was just recently watching the episode of Curb Your Enthusiasm, which he appears on as a doctor, and he's so good. And, I mean, he's getting up there, but he's just so good. And he plays that kind of hardened character so well. It's amazing how well he fits into those Paul Thomas Anderson movies. However, we're not here to talk about Philip Baker Hall, though that would be pretty neat. We're here to talk about Eric Roberts. And in order to talk about Eric Roberts, we have to talk about the latest Eric Roberts news. That's right. It's time for the Roberts Report. Ah, the Roberts Report. This has been another immense couple of weeks in the Robertsverse, not just because of that possible future video I just mentioned, but also because there was a recently released Funny or Die video featuring Eric Roberts playing Donald Trump's lawyer. You see, he's not really Donald Trump's lawyer. He was playing him in a sketch because the lawyer recently made some sort of comment about how in a relationship between a man and his wife, that that a man is unable to rape his wife, which not only is very distasteful, but is also horrible. But Funny or Die, as you may or may not know, can sometimes take these newsworthy incidents and turn them into comedy. Todd, did you think that they succeeded in this case?
You know what? I thought it was pretty funny.
It was funny, not die.
No, I would prefer the death part to be removed from this equation. No, Ooh. It was more funny than death. Let's just put it that way. You know, and they took a news item that was pretty controversial, and you know, they made it slightly funny, but at the same time, it's kind of hard to laugh at something that is as horrifying as that statement was.
Yes. I mean, again, not to get into the political aspect of things, but Donald Trump is out of his mind, and so is his lawyer. Jason, you saw this sketch as well.
Yes, I did.
What did you think?
I pretty much thought the same thing. I'm going, it's such a, touchy issue. It's, it's discussion on rape culture, but it's just, it's going back to, Eric Roberts being the man that he just owns up to it. I just love seeing him in this video, and I love the look of the character. Like, he gets the joke, but my goodness, he's so deadpan about it. And that's a really good credit to how good of an actor that he is, that he's able to bring this pretty touchy subject along and just make it fun. I thought it was hilarious. I was laughing through the whole thing. It's crazy, being a Canadian, I'm just kind of laughing at all the stuff that Donald Trump's doing down in the US right now. But wow, it was really funny. And it was, it's they seem to be pushing the envelope, Funny or Die, with a lot of these topics. But yeah, handled it well. I mean, I've got a wacky sense of humor. It was my kind of weird.
I think what helped it was the fact that it was very short. I think it only runs 3.5 minutes.
It's
1:30.
Okay, so I was way off in my estimation. It only lasts a very short amount of time, so it doesn't have time to kind of overstay its welcome. The central joke is that Eric Roberts' lawyer character is basically comparing the way that he interacted with the interviewer in this case, he basically is comparing it to rape without actually saying it. And that's the joke. I just explained the joke to everybody. So congratulations, rest of the world.
No need to see it now.
No need to see it now. I thought it was very well done. I was also surprised. It's nice to see Eric Roberts showing off a sense of humor, even if he's playing it very deadpan. And that does kind of feed into one of our topics today, one of our subjects, because I think this might be one of the first films where we get to see him do a full-on comedic performance, or at least mostly comedic, but we'll talk about that in just a little bit, because we need to first discuss the trailer for the upcoming John Depue crime thriller called Lazarus Rising. We're not actually going to talk about the trailer. We're just going to mention that it is an upcoming movie. It stars all sorts of really great actors. I don't know that one or that one, but C. Thomas Howell is in it. So that's pretty good. But
that's a name I haven't heard in quite a while.
Well, that's just you, because I'm a regular C. Thomas Howell aficionado.
Fair enough.
Yes. The movie is about, Lazarus Rising is about a hitman on the run and a woman with a secret try to evade teams of assassins headed by the lethal and relentless Mr. Gray. And yes, Eric Roberts is in this movie. I don't know if he plays Mr. Gray. I guess we can only wait and see if that is indeed the case. I also found an article about a television series, a privately financed Spanish television series. I think it's Spanish anyway. It's called Sangre Negra. And currently, they're looking to have it to find a place for it to be aired. I guess it might end up being on the web. But it is the show takes place in Los Angeles and revolves around a Spanish-American family. But what's interesting about it is that it stars two of my favorite people. One of them, Mr. Eric Roberts, and the other one, Mr. Eric Estrada, the two Erics.
Nice.
Yes. Apparently, it's going a video on demand at some point in the very near future. So keep your eyes out for Sangre Negra, a TV series featuring Eric Roberts. Of course, I don't know if he's in every episode, but guess what, Todd? If he is, we're going to have to watch that.
Hey, that's fine with me. I mean, Estrada and Roberts together at last.
If it is in Spanish, like mostly, I do hope it ends up being subtitled. That's going to be a long watch for the both of us. Though, I did take Spanish in university.
I have limited Spanish. I think I could probably muddle through it.
Well, we muddle through everything on
this
show.
Yeah, we do.
So
that's what I aim for.
Finally, on the Roberts Report this week, recently added to Eric Roberts' IMDb page is the film Deadfellas, which is currently aiming for a 2016 release. The film written, directed, and stars Brian Massey, who is an actor who's best known for doing tons and tons of voice work, cartoons and video games, that sort of thing. Eric Roberts is currently rumored to play Vino in this action comedy crime movie. And I searched everywhere, including on the Twitter feed of Brian Massey, and I could find literally no other information about it. I think the title Deadfellas is a little play on Goodfellas.
That's the first thing that I thought when you that title. I'm sort of hoping for a Paul Sorvino cameo in there somewhere. Like, go for a little I need more Paul Sorvino in my life. I talk about another character actor, not to buy too far away from our topic of discussion, but yeah, I'm in. I want to see Deadfellas. I'm sold.
Speaking of Paul Sorvino, at some point we're also going to have to watch the episode or maybe episodes of Law & Order that Eric Roberts has been on. We've discussed this on previous episodes. At one point in the future, we're going to be doing an all procedural, and maybe Paul Sorvino will be in his Law & Order episode. Who knows? Could be. Do you like Law & Order, Jason?
I've seen many episodes, but I did not know that Sorvino and Roberts in an episode together?
Oh, I don't know, but Sorvino was on the show for, I think...
I knew that part, but I wasn't sure if Eric Roberts was on the show.
I'm going to guess that it's almost certainly not the same time period.
Yeah.
But I'm not saying that for sure, and it might have happened, because as we will find out in our future examination of the career of Eric Roberts, that mid-90s period was a real kind of strange dead zone for the career of Eric Roberts, not because he wasn't doing a lot of work, but because he was doing a lot of very strange work. And stuff we haven't really touched upon at this point. Speaking of strange work, today we're talking about two movies starring Eric Roberts. Surprising on Eric Roberts is the fucking man. The first one is 1989's Rude Awakening. It's sort of a comedy drama leaning towards comedy more than drama. And the other is the 1996 television movie reboot, sort of the Doctor Who franchise that I think aired on Fox back in 1996, ended up failing in the sense that it didn't do well in the United States, so it took another, 5 or 6 years in order to get the real reboot off the ground. Eric Roberts did not appear further in that series, but he does appear in Doctor Who from 1996. After this first little break, we're going to be talking Rude Awakening. I hope you're prepared. Are you prepared, Jason?
I'm in.
He's in. Todd?
I am ready.
All right, let's talk Rude Awakening right after this.
Try to catch the moon, try to count the stars, try to run as fast as I can through my darkest hours. I hear a lot of laughter, I've seen a lot of pain. Welcome to the changes, baby. Welcome to the new world. I said what?
I believe in every person there's this light. It may go brighter, it may go dim, but it never goes out.
My name is Brubaker. from the Justice Department?
That was a federal pig. He's looking for you and Jesus, and he says he's coming back.
Okay, let's split.
In 1969, Fred and Jesus had to pack up their dreams of a better world and drop out of sight. Now they're back to give peace a chance. One more time.
Whoa.
Boy, are they in for a rude awakening.
You've been gone 20 years and you still look like dirty, filthy hippies.
Boy, it's still hey, blood.
Who are these people?
Rude Awakening from 1989, directed by David Greenwald and Aaron Russo, starring a real interesting mix of people, including Cheech Marin, Julie Haggerty from the Airplane films, Robert Carradine, Buck Henry is here momentarily, Cindy Williams, Andrea Martin, very strange group, but really starring the pair, the dynamic duo of Cheech Marin and Eric Roberts. For those who haven't seen this movie or were alive when it came out, I mean, I remember it getting a certain amount of attention. I remember this being in the video store, basically every video store I went into in the 1990s. It's about two hippies, I mean, literally, you know, late 1960s hippies who leave their life in New York. They go off to live in the jungle for 20 years. Then they come back after getting some secret information that their jungle location in South America is going to be invaded, that the U.S. is going to start another war, and they decide that they're going to come back to the U.S. and make a big stink about this information and make sure that the war doesn't happen so they don't lose their homestead. It is a completely fucked premise for a movie. And it's also incredibly strange because we're supposed to believe that Eric Roberts was alive and a hippie. I mean, he was alive, but a hippie in 1969, as well as these other characters, and looks exactly the same 20 years later yeah. in 1989. This is an extremely strange movie that is not, even though it is a comedy, I have to say I did not find it particularly funny, but I will say that there's one thing I really loved about it, and we'll talk about that in just a second. First, I want to get both of your impressions, and Jason, since you're the guest, let's start with you. What did you think of Rude Awakening?
Oh, I mean, I'm happy to be finally talking about this movie because, you know, when you first brought it up to me, I'm like, Rude Awakening, I know this movie, but where do I know it from? And so I went on to the Internet Movie Database, I looked up the poster, and then I found the video cover. Now, that video cover is legendary to me. Because you're mentioning, like, I was very much alive when the movie came out. I was a kid, and I remember, you know, circling around the video store looking for something to rent. There was always, it was that crazy poster with, you know, Eric Roberts and Cheech Marin on the poster giving the peace sign. Then you have Julie Haggerty, I think it is, and it's the name of the other actor, the lead actor in the movie. Robert Carradine, yes. So you see that on the, like, I want to rent this. Like, I remember watching it probably when I was a kid on video. I remember nothing about it, but it's just having that seminal poster image. So finally, you know, cut to 2015, I'm sitting down, I'm watching the movie, and it's, yeah, I agree with you. It is a strange movie, and it kind of feels like a play at times. Like, I feel like it has a very kind of stage effect to it as it's telling the story. But I mean, it's also kind of funny because it has like a lot of what the late 80s would consider like stoner cliches. But you look at it today, and there's a lot of, it makes a lot of fun of like 80s yuppie cliches. And there's everyone overacts in this movie. It's almost like it's like a kabuki level type of performance, which I found really weird when I was watching the movie. But it does have like kind of that stage feel to it. And of course, it also made one thing that kind of dates the movie a little bit. Like, there's a lot of this late 80s environmental fear going on in the movie. And of course, there's like the 80s synth score. But again, it goes back, like, I'm watching it with Eric Roberts, who, right, like, he doesn't age at all in the movie. I thought Cheech Marin did a better job at sort of showing 20 years going by. So again, it's an odd premise. It's a movie I kind of liked overall. I mean, it did have a lot of good laughs in the movie. And I'm curious as to what your favorite moment in the movie was too. But yeah, I don't know if it did very well when it came out. I know it's sort of like, I don't even think it's on DVD, or maybe it is somewhere, but it sort of like is a forgotten movie in a way. Like, it didn't really do a lot when it came out, but yeah, it is a good movie. It kind of overall, despite its problems.
It certainly is of that era. There's no doubt about that. I mean, and so certainly a lot of the things brought up, you mentioned the sort of environmental panic. It's not like we don't have environmental panic now, but the kind of environmental panic at that time with the ozone layer and with acid rain, it was very actually a very nostalgic feeling watching this to some extent. Todd, was this your first viewing of Rude Awakening, and what did you think?
I think I tried watching this thing on Cinemax back in the day, and you know, I if I remember right, I turned it off then, and you know, it took me 3 days to watch this thing. I'm not a big Cheech Marin fan. I don't like stoner films, and I couldn't get into it. Things turned around for me when you know they finally come back to America and they meet up with Julie Haggerty, who gives one of my favorite performances in the whole film. And there's the scene where she gets stoned and she's telling them all about what they missed while they were in the jungle while trying to open up this ice cream container. And I think I watched that scene like twice because it's hilarious. And I think she saves the whole movie. Yeah, it's fantastic. But overall, I had a hard time getting into it. It seemed all over the place. I think it would have been a better film had they dropped that top secret document subplot and just followed them coming, you know, out of the jungle and kind of reassimilating into modern culture. But, you know, I laughed a couple of times, but overall it was kind of a hard watch for me.
It's funny that you mentioned that, Todd, because that what you just said about whether the movie would be better if they dropped that sub kind of plot, the MacGuffin, as it were, because it plays into the thing I liked most about this movie. And this is a big spoiler for a movie that almost nobody listening to this is ever going to see. But I need to tell you this because it's a pretty big one. The ending of this movie is so fucked and so incredibly strange and unexpected by me that it almost retroactively made me like the entire rest of the movie more. And just to explain what happens is they have this document, right? And the whole thing is that the big kind of moment of truth is Eric Roberts gives a big speech to these college students and tells them, you know, to care about the environment and that this war is going to happen. And he feels like it didn't really make an impact. And eventually somebody gets those papers that he has to the New York Times and they blow this story wide open. America is going to invade this country. There's going to be a new draft. So this is happening with like 10 minutes left in the movie and you're like, okay, so as a movie like this would be predictable, what's going to happen is, you know, that everyone learns their lesson or at least they're going to stop this from happening. No, that's not what happens. Instead, the American perspective on it is, you know what, maybe we should invade this country. Approval rates for the war are high enough that it actually just happens anyway. And Eric Roberts' character is left with this incredible guilt at starting a war, which was so out of left field for me. It seems to be on such a different level of satire than the rest of the movie that I loved it. I mean, I was like, that is a brave thing to do, even if it makes no sense in the context of the movie. Todd, starting with you, what did you think of the ending of the movie?
You know, I thought that it was pretty ballsy to go in that direction. I didn't see it coming. It didn't fit with the rest of the film. Like, there were just so many odd moments, like Cheech Marin smoking with a fish and all this crazy shit. Oh, you know, it comes like out of the sewer at the end. It's just ridiculous. And you know, if there had been a little bit of editing with the script, I think that the ideas would have come together. But it just seems like such a patchwork of ideas. But I will say that the ending was pretty ballsy.
Those hallucinations that the character that Cheech Marin plays in the movie had been tested on by the U.S. government and with a lot of LSD, so he has hallucinations throughout the movie that are meant to be hilarious. And I do have to say, when he initially views those guys as potatoes, I did think that was really funny. And then I found nothing that Cheech Marin did for the rest of the movie amusing at all.
No, I didn't either.
I just didn't find that character very funny. Jason, what did you think of the ending of the movie?
Well, I mean, I agree with you on it being ballsy, but I thought you were going to mention the actual end of the movie when they're all out on the street and then Cheech has that hallucination that I just felt was so...
That was ballsy bizarre. In a way as well.
It was. And I mean, I think I reacted to that a little bit more because the beginning, like where the joke originally came from earlier in the movie, I didn't find that very funny. And that's sort of where the movie started to lose me a little bit. And then they was like, okay, so you're deciding to end the movie on a fish coming out of a porthole. That's your last, I mean, we've already spoiled the movie. So I'm going to say the last shot of the movie is the fish, you know, just poor, like you could almost see the hand you know, doing the puppetry in the background. Then the movie dares you to do a sing-along at the end. Like, they'll say, don't get out. We need to clean for the next show. There's actually credits with sing-along lyrics.
Basically a follow the bouncing ball type thing.
Like, they were sort of changing the color and highlight. I'm just standing there going, wow, this is like, now that's a pretty ballsy way to end a movie too. But the fact that, like, yeah, they're doing all of the, especially with all seeing all the newspaper headlines, and I'm going, in what world do we live in where would this really happen? It just seems so easy. It happens. Yeah, I couldn't buy that at all. It's funny, as we're talking more about the movie, I'm finding more things at issue with, but still, I'm still laughing at just the absurdity of it all at the same time.
There is a sincerity to this movie that I actually kind of appreciate, even as it made my stomach turn a little bit. When Eric Roberts does do his big speech, it is meant to be a very serious moment. He is, you know, pouring his heart out, and we see the other characters basically look at him with this admiration, like, oh my God, he's really telling it like it is. But from the perspective of a cynical mid-30s man like myself, I can't help but watch that scene and think, ugh. And we mentioned the very ending. The first thing after the ridiculous fish coming out of the tunnel at the end of the movie and speaking to Cheech Marin, it then goes to a screen which shows a dedication that the movie is dedicated to all the people who care about the planet. Be good is what it says. So that sincerity, I know, I don't mean to be so cynical about it. Honestly, the message of the movie is very, very positive. And we aren't so far removed from that sort of perspective on the environment that we couldn't still take a pretty good message from it. But it also seems so simplistic. I expected, you know, coming into this movie, which I hadn't seen before, for it to be very much a fish out of water type movie. And it is to some extent. But, you know, it's, you know, hippies who have been out of the country for 20 years coming back and having trouble, you know, getting used to this yuppie lifestyle and this fast-paced New York with all the new skyscrapers and things like that. And there are elements of that. And honestly, maybe it would have been worse if it just kind of belabored the point. But as it is, it just seems like there wasn't much to it. There isn't as much substance, which I guess might be why I really gripped on to that cynical ending, because it's like, yeah, that's how shitty people are. They're going to accept a war that they've been lied about. It's almost a little looking forward, I think, to some extent. But the most important thing for us to talk about here is the length of Eric Roberts' hair in this movie.
Great, this movie, long hair in this one, yeah.
Now, this is 1989, the same year, I believe, as Best of the Best, or is this a right around that same time period? And when we talked about Best of the Best on this very program, I believed that we were at peak Eric Roberts' hair in that movie. But now I've watched this, and I've discovered that there's a whole other layer to it. Todd, what did you think about Eric Roberts' hair? He has a full, luxurious mane of hair in this movie.
Yeah, it's like a Pantene commercial. It's insane. It strangely adds a lot to his character. I thought, like, if he had shown up, you know, he shows up back, you know, at Julie Haggerty's apartment, he's got the full beard and the long hair, and he looks at himself in the mirror and he says, I need scissors. And I was terrified that he was going to cut his hair, but he just trimmed his beard. So I was happy because, you know, the long hair stayed. And, you know, I think I found myself staring at it probably a little too much while I was watching the movie and trying to make my way through it. But no, his hair is epic.
Now, I need to get your perspective on this as well, Jason. What did you think, not only of Eric Roberts with this beautiful lengthy hair, but also how he looked with a very realistic beard in this movie?
Oh, I mean, my goodness. I mean, yeah, the hair. It was fantastic. I mean, the fact that he kept the same hairstyle throughout that 20 years, I also thought was very impressive, too. It's another sort of thing, like, not to go too back on, like, the overall in the movie. Like, I kind of was thinking, like, man, what if this was, like, kind of like a time travel movie or something? Like, what happened if, like, they got somehow transported 20 years in the future in 1969, like immediately, like they didn't live those 20 years. I thought that would have been like a much funnier thing, especially I think the hair would have made more sense too. Like he never cut it at all, like during that time, it seemed, or he just wanted to keep it this kind of hippie. Like this is the thing, like Eric Roberts looks in a lot of his movies. I mean, you know, doing my research and like looking through some photos and going, wow, it's just, he seems to never have like the same style twice. It seems like he really wants to mix it up a lot with all of his movies. So it's kind of, it's almost like, you know, Christopher Walken's been in a lot of movies, but he sort of stays the same look throughout. But he's like, no, I want my hair is going to be like this in this movie, or it's going to be gray, or it's going to be black, or the, you know, I'm going to have no beard or whatever. So in this case, I think he looks great in the movie, and especially when he's getting his many, many, many speeches in the film. It's like the camera holds on him, and you get to see, yeah, you get to see, you know, the hair going below the frame. That's always my biggest laughs for me, for like when you can't even see the end of it at the bottom of the frame. But yeah, good stuff.
Eric Roberts is a hair chameleon, as I think we can all agree on that. Sticking with you for a second, Jason, there's also a scene in this movie where Eric Roberts dances. In fact, he dances so well and so enthusiastically that he basically have women throwing themselves at him because him with that hair and that ability to dance, I mean, it's really all I think a female human is looking for in a mate. What did you think of his dancing?
Well, I mean, it's funny. Like I mentioned Christopher Walken a minute ago. I can even mention it again. That like it's, I'm feeling a lot of comparisons to Walken. You know, not just with this movie, but like just sort of his overall canon as an actor. And I love that he's dancing in this movie. I was like dancing. Anyone dancing in any movie makes me smile. Like almost in any way. I mean, I posted this video, my Facebook feed about a week ago of just like this dancing compilation. Dancing makes every movie better. I mean, some of my all-time favorite movies, like Singing in the Rain, involves dancing. So I'm not comparing it, you know, his dancing to that. But I just, it just lightens up any movie. And he just does a great job with presence in the movie. And if you can add dancing to that, that's icing on the cake.
Todd, at one point he does the monkey. What did you think about that?
It made my nipples pop. Isn't that
what? Oh, that's what the woman says.
I mean,
that's just the air conditioning, Todd.
Yeah, I mean... That whole club scene was pretty funny. I mean, from, you know, him dancing and then, you know, getting that guy to break down and discover that he had some sort of like sexual molestation in his past and he didn't like to be touched because of it. I mean, that whole scene was so bizarre. And I thought that his dancing brought some much needed levity to that whole sequence.
Now, speaking of all of that, Eric Roberts is really the lead in this movie, and this movie is, at its core, a comedy. So, what do you think of Eric Roberts' performance overall in this movie, and how do you feel about him as a comedic performer? And I'm going to start with you, Todd.
I didn't think that he had too many, like, really comedic moments in the movie.
That's true.
I felt like he was pretty much the straight man, and you know, all of the funny moments fell to Cheech Marin, and I use funny in quotes, and Julie Haggerty, who I thought was actually the funniest part of the whole movie. I thought Eric Roberts was really good in it. You know, his character is very sincere. You know, we get to see him cry at the end, which is always good.
I was going to say, this is another movie where Eric Roberts cries.
He breaks down. Like, he's lost his faith in everything, and then everybody comes around and is like, hey, you know, dude, we heard you, and I thought that was a really cool moment. But, you know, overall, he's not very funny, and I think he can be funny. Like, the clip in The Cable Guy was, you know, I think it illustrates that he can pull it off when he wants to. But in this, I'd say he's more the straight guy.
The fact is, a movie that is much more of a drama, like The Pope of Greenwich Village, he actually gives a more comedic performance in that than he does in this, which, again, he is playing. It's strange because it's not really a straight man role in that he's not reacting to a lot of the goofiness that's going on around him. He's just playing the character as if the character actually did do what this character is supposed to do. You know, he's not intentionally acting goofy or ridiculous or pretending to have hallucinations for no goddamn reason. So, you know, I think it works in the context of the movie, but yeah, I don't know if it necessarily shows off his comedy chops. Jason, what did you think of Eric Roberts in this movie?
Yeah, for me, it was one thing I was noticing, like, he had a lot of monologues in the movie, and he really liked to over explain things, almost to just like make the screen time a little bit longer, as it were. Like, this is about a 100 minute movie, so it's about average length for a movie, I'd say. But I felt like he really likes to explain stuff in this movie, and very slowly and very eloquently. And yeah, and again, his monologues, especially like towards the end, I thought were great. I thought it was a fine performance. I liked Julie Haggerty's performance in the movie as well too, and I liked Cheech, although I felt it was a little wanting, you know, towards the end for him. But like, it did feel like he didn't have as much screen time as Eric Roberts did. But yeah, he was fine. Like, I mean, again, it's all going back to what I was saying about presence and just having that charisma on screen that I thought was quite magnetic. So I thought he was really good.
In terms of a comedic performer who does go all out, Andrea Martin, Canada's own Andrea Martin, has a very small appearance in this movie where she gets shit-faced and acts ridiculous for about 10 minutes to liven things up. Yep. Just want to talk about that briefly. Jason, what did you think of Andrea Martin in this movie?
Oh, I love Andrea Martin. I mean, she's been in SCTV. She's been in way too many movies. Like, Wag the Dog, I remember she had a pretty amazing part in that one too, Barry Levinson's movie. She's wonderful, and I just wish there was more of her. I mean, I would, if she had like more, just more screen time, would have been great. But yeah, she kind of gets very, very wasted. It's going back to earlier what I was saying, sort of about like the I don't know, like some of the overacting, it's some of like the play feel and the stage feel of that section of the movie. I mean, you get like a pretty extended sequence with her, which was great. It just leaves you wanting more. So maybe that's a compliment to her performance, or I'm not sure, but yeah, she's awesome, and I just love seeing her in any movie.
That section is almost like it almost gets screwball-y, and it made me think that this movie could have benefited from a few more performances that went a little all out like that. I think Cheech is supposed to be like that, but you know, Andrea Martin, I think, well, I'm just going to say it, she's funnier than Cheech Marin. And she really takes a role that could have been very throwaway, and as she usually does, gives her all.
Yeah.
But we're coming to the end of our discussion of Rude Awakening. And with the end of this discussion, we have to ask the regular and immortal question that we ask on every episode of Eric Roberts is the Fucking Man. Starting with you, Todd, does this film, Rude Awakening from 1989, confirm or deny the theory of this podcast, which is that Eric Roberts is the fucking man?
I would say that it wholeheartedly confirms that Eric Roberts is the fucking man, from the hair to the sincerity to his ability to rise above the material.
Let's call it sincerity. Thank you. Jason, confirm or deny the theory?
I'm going to happily confirm that Eric Roberts is the fucking man with Rude Awakening. He was a solid part of why I did overall enjoy this movie, despite its problems. He's great. He looks great. And again, the monologues and how he over-explains things, and like you said, his dancing really sealed it for me. So good stuff. He is the man.
Eric Roberts is the man. We heard it from both Todd and Jason today. I will happily confirm that he is actually very strong in this movie. And if you watch this, say, back-to-back with Best of the Best, which is an extremely different kind of movie, but made in the same year, I mean, these are two very, very varied performances. What we're really learning in the early days of Eric Roberts is the Fucking Man is that this is an actor with diverse talents, and that diversity is just going to get more diverse in the future. And I don't just mean because he's going to play a police officer in about 100 movies. He's going to get to play everybody, from the devil to somebody's dad. We'll be covering those those roles in future episodes. But everyone, just take a minute and take a breath, because we need to take a break, because when we come back, we're going to be talking about the nerdiest thing you could talk about, Doctor Who, and specifically the 1996 Doctor Who television movie. Join us after this, where we'll continue.
It's about time.
Who are you?
I am the Doctor!
In the fight for eternity.
At midnight tonight, this planet will be pulled inside out.
There can only be one master.
I never liked this planet, Doctor.
Paul McGann is Doctor Who.
Don't panic! Everything is under control!
Monday, the 27th of May on BBC One.
In the late 1980s, Doctor Who was no longer a rating success, or at least comparatively, and was canceled by the BBC. And a number of years later, there was an attempt to revive it. And actually, that revival got a lot of attention. I recall it very well in the mid-1990s. At one point, Amblin Entertainment was actually connected to it. And they did not end up being connected to its final form, which ended up being a television movie that was meant to launch a new TV series. And in this form, and this movie that we're going to be talking about today, the Doctor, Doctor Who, was played by Paul McGann from With Nail and I and a number of different roles. And the baddie, the master, the classic Doctor Who villain, was played by Eric Roberts. As I mentioned in the previous episode, I actually watched this when it first aired in 1996 with no context at all. At that point, I had seen maybe the opening credits of a few Doctor Who episodes, because it used to play on YTV here in Canada quite a bit throughout the 1990s, but I knew nothing about the character. And watching this movie without the context of anything was a very confusing experience. I'm not surprised that it did not necessarily take in America. Though, since then, the revival has actually happened and has been a massive success and continues to this very day. So today we're going to talk about a subject that the two people who are with me today are experts on, and that is Doctor Who. Yeah, I am being slightly facetious. We are not all the biggest necessarily Doctor Who fans in the world, but I think that actually gives us an interesting perspective, because we're coming at this as, of course, fans of Eric Roberts, but also people who are curious about the whole franchise. So let's start with you, Jason, our guest. What were your thoughts on this 1996 Doctor Who TV movie?
Well, I mean, again, you know, you did just say that you were being facetious. I am not knowledgeable on Doctor Who that much. I'm going to get that right out there. I'm a movie guy. I mostly stick to theaters. Even growing up, I didn't watch terribly much TV. I mean, the occasional Doctor would come on, like you were saying about YTV. I think even PBS would air some stuff mm-hmm. back in the day. And so I sort of, my interest in that was fleeting. I don't know why it was, really why it wasn't. But so I did, you know, you did get me a copy of this episode with Eric Roberts in. And as I'm starting to watch it, I'm like, I have no idea what's going on. And as I was watching, I still don't know what's going on. I do know a little bit about the TARDIS, his character, the time traveling spaceship. I find that, like, that's a fascinating thing. And as I'm watching, I'm like, I could probably get into this, especially with, you know, the last couple of years you had Karen Gillan. I'm a huge fan of. She was in the show for a couple of years too. Mm-hmm. But you know, this is an Eric Roberts podcast, so you know, I did want to focus on the Eric Roberts bit. And I just, like, you know, like any other, a lot of other movies, I wish he was in it a lot more. In this case, the very first shot of the movie that he's in an ambulance playing a paramedic, I'm like, okay, he's back. Like, it's, I was like, I want to see more of this guy. But the thing is, like, going back to, like, his performance, like his types of performances, he really wants to stand out. Like, when he does a performance, I could tell that, like, he gives it his all, and he really wants to have that presence and being there. And even just playing sort of a paramedic, he's bending down and he's trying to take care of the situation and everything. That was quite amusing. And then it gets into the later scenes where he sort of turns into, like, this, your evil possessed character, and I love the makeup and the big green eyes that he has on them. But still, I didn't know what the heck was going on in this episode at all, and I was just sort of lost. Unfortunately, like, the episode didn't, the movie didn't really do anything for me, despite the fact it was filmed in Vancouver, and I got to see mm-hmm. like a lot of interesting circa 90s Vancouver thing, you know, sort of pre Canada Line, pre most things. Actually, kind of had a very kind of old vibe to it. You can see a little, like, a very old Chinatown in the movie, old Granville Street, and Granville Bridge also sort of had a cameo in there a little bit. So yeah, I mean, I know I'm sort of dancing around the subject and answering your question, but yeah, again, not the biggest Doctor Who fan, but my goodness, you know, just more Eric Roberts in everything. Let's just do it that way. Why not?
I mean, I do not disagree. I will say that when I watched it back in 1996 without understanding anything about it, my understanding since then, having understood a little more about the franchise and about Doctor Who in general, my understanding was that this television movie was seen as a bit of a travesty to such an extent that it was almost disowned, at least for a while, by a lot of Doctor Who fans. So when I went into watching it this time, I went with the perspective that, you know, it was really going to kind of shit all over a lot of the history. So what I was most surprised about was discovering that it actually is so in some ways, reverential to the history of Doctor Who that it becomes nearly impenetrable to someone who doesn't already know a lot about Doctor Who.
Yeah.
And in fact, I was also surprised how much Sylvester McCoy, the seventh Doctor, was in the movie, even though he didn't have a lot to do. It takes a good, 20 minutes before he ends up regenerating into the new Doctor in the movie. So, and as of, I think, the last year, they managed to fit the Eighth Doctor, Paul McGann's Doctor, into the continuity of the series to make all of this stuff canon, if you care about that word or what that means at all. Todd, Doctor Who, what does it mean to you, and what does this movie mean to you?
I haven't seen a single episode of Doctor Who. I know it's a TV show.
It is.
I know that there's a...
Except here, where it's a movie.
Yeah. a time-traveling phone booth. And
it's a police box.
A police
Todd.
Box.
Jesus Christ.
And, well, yeah. See, as you can tell, I am well versed in the world and the universe of Doctor Who. And the movie was a confusing clusterfuck. I had no idea what the hell was going on, though. I did appreciate Eric Roberts' scenery chewing once he deep throats the monster and becomes something called the Master. But yeah, I mean, I watched it for the cheesiness, and there was plenty of that. But as far as me telling you what the hell happened throughout the course of those 85 minutes, I have no idea.
Oh my, Todd. Now, you might recall on the previous episode of this show, I asked you directly what the name of that police box was.
You did, and I told you it was the TARDIS, but I had no idea what that stood for.
No, at the time you had no idea what that stood for, but now that you've seen the movie, obviously it stands for...
Time.
Oh.
Apparatus. That's about all I got.
Well, thankfully, listener of the show, Lay Bull, at Cookie Pianos on Twitter, correctly mentioned that, of course, TARDIS stands for Time and Relative Dimensions in Space, which everybody knows, Todd.
Yeah, I...
Jason would have just yelled it out if I had called on him.
I actually did know this. I mean, I got to pose with the TARDIS at Vancouver's Fan Expo a couple of months ago, and it's funny, like, I did actually learn a little bit about the box. But that's about all I know to you know, both of your credits as well, that, yeah, I'm not knowledgeable on this show either. So there's also that.
I feel woefully uneducated.
Well, I guess that is actually a good follow-up question, which is, did it make you, both of you, and we'll start actually with you, Todd, more curious to investigate the history of Doctor Who?
It's okay
to say no.
Well, here's the thing. Had I not known anything about the reboot, and I've heard a lot of people talk about it and the acclaim that it's received. Had I not known about any of that, and I had just watched this 1996 movie, no, I would not want to have anything else to do with Doctor Who. But knowing what I know, I still think that the concept is really cool, and I would actually, if I could find the time, would love to get into the reboot at least.
Well, you know, it's not strictly a reboot because it's all canon. This all fits together. That's okay. Just keep stuttering for a little bit while I turn to Jason. Jason, are you more curious about investigating the history of Doctor Who? I mean, you have stood next to the TARDIS.
That is very true. Now, on the other hand, I mean, this is probably one of the things that you and I agree on Twitter is like I go nuts when everyone mentions Game of Thrones in any way, shape, or form on Twitter, especially when an episode breaks. Like,
right?
TV discussion drives me crazy. And also probably because I don't have cable. I really don't watch a lot of TV anymore. I mean, even online or, you know, via like an episode on my computer. So really, like, TV is not something I'm interested in. But I love Karen Gillan. She's fantastic. And I heard she's amazing in her years on the show. So I wouldn't mind seeing those episodes. But the entire canon, the world, I don't think at my age, it's something that I can get into.
Your age, Jason. You're a virile young man like myself. I will say that, in fact, compared to the both of you, I actually think I way more enjoyed this TV movie. I was shocked at how much I enjoyed it and how much fun I had with it and how it kind of captures that quirky sense of humor that I really wanted out of it. It starts in a very serious manner with the with Sylvester McCoy's Seventh Doctor basically being killed because he's brought to Earth and medical professionals who have no idea how to deal with someone who has two hearts. But once he makes that transition to Paul McGann's Eighth Doctor, I find that the movie really perks up. And in fact, I loved Paul McGann's performance in this. I really liked him. I found him so refreshing. I think a lot of people had difficulty because they gave him like a love interest in it, and that is sort of against how the history of this character is normally presented. But he's such a lively actor, and he really kind of envelops that role entirely. It made me feel very bad for him that he for a very long time, I think, was kind of dismissed, and I'm glad that he's gotten kind of regained that reputation. As I mentioned on the previous show, up until last year where he made a brief appearance on Doctor Who in order to help with that continuity, his only other appearances have been on radio dramas. And that's another thing. If you're going to delve into Doctor Who, it's not just the TV show. You also have radio dramas, which are part of the continuity, as well as books that are part of the continuity. And it just, it's an endless rabbit hole that will just drive you up the fucking wall if you investigate it too far. But I was really, really pleased with Paul McGann's performance in this. And it, even, you know, compared to Eric Roberts, who of course we were here to see, I was very impressed by it. But another actor that I'm sure jumped out to the both of you was the Canadian Mr. Will Sasso.
Oh, yes.
Who appears briefly in the movie. A very young Will Sasso. I think pre-Mad TV, in fact. Here. Actually, it must have been, eh? Let's talk briefly about your fandom of Will Sasso. You are Canadian like myself, Jason. Was that a surprise to see him in this movie?
Oh, very, very much so. I mean, I know he's a Vancouver actor originally. Like, he's also been in quite a few Canadian movies in the last couple of years. That being said, he's been fun in the show too. And actually, you know, one thing I will say, just to add to what you were saying, like, the performances in the show were great. Like, I actually really liked all the actors in the show. So my problems with it were like really more personal than the production itself. It's a good looking show. I mean, I thought it was very well photographed. Again, the Vancouver photography was great. His performance in the movie was great fun, and it was really cool to see like a very young Will Sasso. He almost doesn't look like how he does today.
I was actually really impressed with the direction of it. There's a lot of complex camera work and things that the kind of thing that you wouldn't normally see on a television episode, right, and even in a TV movie. There was obviously efforts made to make it a little more cinematic. Outside of Will Sasso, who you can of course discuss as well, Todd, we also see another familiar face to fans of this podcast, not just Eric Roberts, but his wife Eliza Roberts is in this movie.
That's right.
And she meets an unfortunate end at the hands of Eric Roberts. What was your reaction to noticing that the couple Roberts were in this movie?
I knew that she and Eric showed up a lot. Listen to me, I sound like we're best friends, you know. She and Eric, you know, they show up in everything. No, I knew that they started a lot of stuff together, and it was interesting to see her in it, especially since I'm assuming that she got her neck snapped or was choked, mm-hmm, or just got crushed at some point. And it must have been weirdly therapeutic to a certain degree. You know, he channels that like, she's bothering me today. So I get to pretend like I'm murdering my wife for 5 minutes.
Wow. I think that actually what you just said represents some of your own issues more than it does the feelings necessarily of Mr. Eric Roberts.
You think I'm projecting?
Perhaps.
I don't think so.
All right, well, fair enough. One other notable thing about the production of this movie is that it involves a lot of computer-generated effects. And let me add, 1996 computer-generated effects. And let me add on to that, television-quality 1996 computer effects. Some of it, not necessarily impressive. And that includes the fact that occasionally we see the master in the form of sort of liquid goo that floats around in a not necessarily convincing way before getting inside the gullet of Mr. Eric Roberts, who, and it does cure his snoring. So, I mean, you got to give him that. It's a pretty, pretty, pretty impressive goo when you think about it. So the master, who is a classic Doctor Who villain, is goo, goes inside Eric Roberts, who is an ambulance attendant, and then it kind of envelops his body, and he is the master. And that's why Eric Roberts is the baddie in this movie. I thought it was a pretty good, it's sort of like the hidden. You would think, actually, that it was going to set up a lot of body swapping, especially because in the movie, there's a suggestion that the body is actually deteriorating, which is why he wants to switch himself into the body of the doctor. And I'm not going to get into the history of why he would need to do that, because I don't necessarily understand it. But let's talk about Eric Roberts for a moment, longer than a moment, in fact. Going back to you again, Todd, Eric Roberts got to really overact in this movie. He gets to play the bad guy. And one of the nice things about it is that he has to pretend to be the good guy, even while he's being the bad guy for a lot of the movie. So he gets to be very devious and almost kind of devil-like in his performance. What did you think of him in Doctor Who?
I really liked his performance. I thought he was suitably hammy as the Master. I thought that he was sinister without being, completely nefarious. He was, it was an entertaining performance. I don't really know how it compares to people who have played him in the past. I know I did, I looked in the Internet Movie Database comments, which is, not usually something that I would recommend anybody do. And there seemed to be a lot of hate for his performance. And I wondered how that compared to some of the other people who have played that character.
Well, and I'm just going to go back to you in a second, Jason. I just want to mention briefly that in the IMDb trivia for this Doctor Who TV movie, they mentioned some of the actors that were considered for the role of the Doctor in this movie and the actors who were considered for the role of the Master. Some of these actors that were considered for the Master included F. Murray Abraham, Dan Aykroyd, Richard Dean Anderson, MacGyver himself, Armand Desante, Scott Bakula, James Belushi, Tom Berenger, David Bowie, Steve Buscemi, Dana Carvey, Chevy Chase, Phil Collins, Tim Curry, Timothy Dalton, Matt Dillon, and so on. And so basically every actor in Hollywood from 1996, a real interesting mix. If you continue, by the way, John Lithgow, Rick Moranis, Randy Quaid.
Tom Waits. That's
Tom Waits. That would have been actually pretty terrific. Yeah. Keenan Ivory Wayans as the Master. James Woods or Bill Pullman. I can see how people at the time might have been, especially because this is an American playing it and playing it to that that really over-the-top, hammy way, could probably catch in someone's throat a little. Though I do think that it's appropriate for the kind of story that they were telling here. And in fact, he doesn't really go crazy over-the-top until the very end of the movie anyway. Jason, what were your thoughts on Eric Roberts' performance in the movie, and do you think his performance would have been better if that role was instead played by Dana Carvey?
As long as Eric Roberts is still in the movie, I'm happy with that. I mean, you can put it, wow, Dana Carvey. I don't know. Can we take another break? I think I need to, go for a walk and think about that. Wow. My thing is, I always wish he was kind of in the movie more. I don't know. I did like some of his hammy overacting again. Even his first scene, I know he just wants to own the scene, and I kind of loved a later scene of the movie, when you first see him, that leather jacket, and he's sort of being a little bit meta as he's explaining being in the room and who he is. That was some pretty funny meta Eric Roberts stuff. So yeah, I mean, overall it was not as good as his Rude Awakening performance. I just needed more of him, I think. But yeah, and maybe it's just going back to my whole sort of aversion to Doctor Who itself and the show. So maybe it's not a great comment, but yeah, he was fine. I thought
he was fine. Says Jason White.
Quote me on the poster saying that. Yeah.
Why did this fail? Why did this not succeed as a television movie that captured the imagination the way that this character has captured the imagination of a whole nation of people for, 40, 50 years, and has managed to, again, catch even American audience in this kind of newer version of it? Why did this fail? Jason, why did this fail?
Well, I mean, I don't have too much to compare this to, really. But
that's true.
You do ask an interesting question. It has been around since the 60s. There has been such a franchise for this show, so you sort of ask why didn't it do well, and I'm thinking maybe it was just that period of time where it didn't have a generation of fans that it does now. I mean, the night, like when I think of the late 90s, I think of like all the bad summer blockbuster movies that came out and why they were bad. And I just think like there wasn't really a lot behind any of them. Like there was nothing to connect to on a story level. And maybe, and for a lot of TV shows, I felt that was the same way. I think it was just probably the writing and the, probably it just wasn't as accessible to a lot of people. Like for me, like this as my first Doctor Who experience, like fully seeing an episode through, like I'm not really interested in seeing the other Doctor Who stuff or episodes or whatever. But I mean, I'm open to the fact that I might see like a Karen Gillan episode, or I might see like another Doctor Who episode around that I might really enjoy. So I think it was just probably a combination of writing and bad timing why it didn't do well.
I think that the impenetrableness of it for those who weren't already familiar was certainly a contributing factor. How about yourself, Todd? Do you agree?
Yeah, I do. I think that it was hard to get into. You honestly had to know quite a bit about it, I think, to appreciate everything that it was trying to do. And I agree with Jason that I just don't think it was the right time for Doctor Who in America. Mm-hmm. That aside, I think that, you know, maybe the cheesiness of it to a certain degree probably turns some people off, because it does, to me anyway, feel very much like a made-for-TV movie. And I think that if they were trying to get people into the series, that probably wasn't the best way to go about it.
I think that's an interesting perspective, especially when you look at some of the, say, 60s or 70s or even 80s episodes of Doctor Who, where because of its sort of shoddiness and shot-on-video-ness of it, it looks particularly cheesy. And I think the real difficulty that this movie had was that it had to serve all masters, right? It had to serve the diehards, and it had to serve a whole new audience who might have not been familiar with the character at all. It's not like relaunching a James Bond franchise where everybody knows the basics. This one has so many kind of, there's so much history there, right? And to make it all connect together while still giving a satisfying story, it basically has to be an origin story and a new story, and with the amount of history it has, it's impossible to do a proper origin story. It's almost better to just either focus entirely on a new audience and reboot it from the beginning, or focus entirely on the diehards and hope that everyone else will catch up at some point. In this way, I think it failed because it tried to make everyone happy, and in turn, it made very few people happy. That said, one person it did make happy was me, because Eric Roberts was in it. And I'm going to say, before I get to both of you, that Eric Roberts is the fucking man in this movie. In fact, he's the manster in this movie, because he's the master. That's the character he plays. Todd, what did you think? Eric Roberts is the fucking man, yes or no?
Yes, wholeheartedly, again, because he was the only reason that I kept watching it through till the end.
Ba-boom. Jason, fucking man, yes or no?
Absolutely yes. I mean, again, probably my favorite part of watching this on assignment, Doug, he is the man, and he has the presence, and it's all there. And honestly, that was pretty much the only thing I enjoyed about it. So, he is the fucking man.
what you should take away from all of our opinions here is that if you like Eric Roberts, even if you don't care about Doctor Who, you got to see it because he's the master in it. But yes, Eric Roberts is the fucking man. Everyone has agreed on both of our subjects today. A rare agreement between all panelists, which is incredibly exciting and confirms the very existence of this podcast, which again will have to continue until the day when everyone agrees that Eric Roberts is not the fucking man, which after watching these two movies, I can't imagine is ever going to happen. But I guess we will see. That's Doctor Who from 1996. I say check it out. These two, maybe not so much. Well, I mean, check these guys out, yes, but maybe they don't agree to check out the movie. After this break, we're going to come back and do a little housekeeping, do a little plugging, and then we're going to talk about what's going to be featured on our next episode. Success! We'll be right back. Okay, that's episode 7 of Eric Roberts is the Fucking Man. I want to thank our wonderful guest, Jason White. Jason, I'm hoping that this is the start of a beautiful friendship that is going to allow us to meet in person, hug in person. Who knows where that might go?
Are you going to be at TIFF? Yeah, TIFF, absolutely. Toronto Film Festival.
Yeah, if you're going to be at TIFF this year, I'm going to be at TIFF this year. Todd, you're going to have to get your ass to TIFF as well. So we'll have a big TIFF party together. For those who don't know what TIFF is, that's the Toronto International Film Festival, of course, taking place in September. I do hope to see you there,
Jason. Absolutely, I'll be there. My third year at TIFF, so I can't wait. It's one of my favorite festivals in the world. Just an amazing, amazing time.
In fact, this will be my third or fourth TIFF. Yeah. And so, yeah, so it is the thing I look forward to most.
We'll have to make arrangements. It is a busy festival. I mean, even like we mentioned Rachel at the beginning of the show. I had to make, like, it took us like 4 days to meet, and we were in the same city. Like, that was that bad.
It's funny, I haven't met Rachel, but I've met her husband a number of times, and actually, yeah, and we're fairly close. Jason, between now and then, for people who want to spend time with you on the internet, what's the best way for them to do so?
Oh, absolutely. So I have our show on CFAX 1070. You can listen online, CFAX1070.com. I also have a podcast called Cinema Spiel, which is at soundcloud.com/CinemaSpiel, CinemaSpiel. I also do the occasional film review and articles on efilmcritic.com, which I've been with for many, many, many years. And also Cool FM mornings on Friday. Also, the big thing, Twitter, the big Twitter junkie, as you know, this is where we met. Jason White on Twitter, JasonWhyte. And I think that's enough plugging for me. you're going to get more annoyed. But yeah, that's right. I'm on all those platforms and everything. But please follow me on Twitter. That's where everything comes together, I think.
If you want to get your fill of Jason White, well, that's impossible. You just can't. But if you want to get as much as possible, yeah, you add him on Twitter. Speaking of adding people on Twitter, you can add Todd Rigney on Twitter as well. And where else can you be found, Todd?
You can find me on Twitter, as you mentioned, at The Film Fiend, or you can swing by Dread Central and Far East Films to read all of my good thoughts about horror and martial arts. And you can also get my old ass book, which is now a new ass ebook, called Found, on Amazon.
Everyone do that. We'll link that on this episode as well, so you can get out there and get your copy. You, of course, can find me over on Twitter as well at Doug_Tilley. That's TILLEY. You can find my writing over at dailygrindhouse.com. You can also find my other podcast, No Budget Nightmares, at nobudgetpodcast.com. If you want to read up on Eric Roberts, you can do that at the Eric Roberts is the Fucking Man Twitter feed at ERITFM, or go over to ericrobertsistheman.com, where you can subscribe on iTunes and Stitcher or wherever you want to subscribe to it, and also check out some of our older episodes as well. There's also a Facebook group. If you're on Facebook, go do a search for Eric Roberts is the Man and come join us and talk Eric Roberts. On the next episode of Eric Roberts is the Fucking Man, we will be featuring special guest filmmaker Tanya Atomic, who will be discussing two more Eric Roberts films, Stranded, aka Doc Holliday's Revenge, which I think was from 2014, as well as 1995's The Nature of the Beast, which is a very controversial film because it was directed by Victor Salva. And if you know that name, then you know why it's controversial. And as usual on Eric Roberts is the Fucking Man, we shall not shy away from controversy. We will tell it like it is. And I expect that, just as this episode was, to be a very entertaining discussion. Thank you, gentlemen, for taking part. Thank you, listeners, for listening and giving us your time. Join us next time for episode 8 of Eric Roberts is the Fucking Man. Let's listen to the rest of that theme song.
Eric Roberts is the Fucking Man. Eric Roberts is the Fucking Man. Eric Roberts is the Fucking Man. If there's anything that you can do, Eric Roberts fucking can.